was also a sannyasi at one time, and he's from France. But they both came back to the movement. She became very, very serious and committed herself wholeheartedly to Krishna consciousness. He didn't. He died in about He died exactly a few months later, and she's still going strong. She's a walking miracle. By all clinical observations, she should have left her body many years ago. Those of you who are doctors, you know about T cell count. T cell count is your immune system. She has a T cell count of 15. Nothing. There's no immune. She has no immune system at all. So if she gets sick, she could die. But this was in 1990. So it's been 14 years. And since then, she's been not only serving nicely, but doing some amazing service and preaching and traveling. She's quite dedicated to. She made a vow to give her life everything she had. She felt she was going to die, so she just surrendered everything and just became completely absorbed in service. And she's been like that ever since. So since then, Krishna saw that and just keeping her going. So Krishna can do anything. The doctors, you know, they can give their understanding, but ultimately, Krishna is the ultimate doctor. I understand that. He's the ultimate doctor, especially for the devotees. But from the medical point of view, Sridhar Swami Maharaj is quite sick, and he's got cancer, and it's spreading. So he's on his way to Mayapur. So offer your prayers, and the most powerful medicine is the prayers of the Vaishnavas. It's actually more powerful than any medicine we can administer. It may not seem like it, but it actually is. Prayers of the Vaishnavas. You can keep, Prabhupada said in his latter days, the results of the book scores are keeping me alive. He was serious, too. He said, this is keeping me alive, the book score results. Okay, so for class, I just came in and was quite unprepared for any particular subject. But if anyone has a suggested subject?
Well, you were telling that you'll be doing a seminar on Guru.
Guru?
No, another thing also. Samsara,
the meaning of the samsara. Of your last
also, Chaitra Dhruvanath is not over, man.
How much
is it? Guru Vandana.
Chaitra Dhruvanath, how many verses is it?
Two.
Two verses it did, Maharaj.
Yeah.
One and two.
Oh, from Shikshastaka?
Shikshastaka, yeah.
That's wrong. You want me to do the third verse today?
That's not it.
Hare Krishna. I'm going to have to skip lunch. Is that okay?
Maharaj, you can continue, Maharaj. You can do a little bit today and then Saturday we can continue the same. That was very nice, Maharaj.
Does everyone remember the first two verses? I did. I don't think so. It's been like 2 years ago.
Also, you did on Japa also one class.
I did.
On Radha Japa. And
well, whatever you desire, I can do the third verse if you want. Or else I can talk about Guru Disciple. That's good. Shikshastaka, the third verse is Trinada Pisanichana. Tayori Vasa Hishnu Marina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadarahi. If you want, I can speak on humility.
What is this? We can speak on Monday evening, Maharaj. We have a group called as TPF.
Okay.
Training preachers for them. All the green comes.
It'll be more, I can make a better presentation. Now, given I have developed by suggestion of the Croatian Yatra, every year in Croatia, at the end of August, they do is what they do is a camp. And in that camp, they bring devotees in to give seminars. It's 10 days worth of seminars. And so every year, Jayapataka Maharaj comes, Satchinanda Swami comes, Krishna Kshetra comes, Sridhar Swami Maharaj comes also. And I come, and so every year I ask them what seminar you want me to give. So this year they said Guru Disciple. So I developed this seminar based on Prabhupada's statements in his books and in his lectures in general on what is Guru and what is Disciple and what is the relationship between the two. The basis of that seminar is a discussion or an explanation on Shikaru Chavana Padma, that prayer. But I'll speak today about five wrong attitudes of a disciple. Five ways that a disciple becomes fallen in relationships to his guru. That is how to not properly approach or serve the guru. And there are five, what we say, just five improper attitudes of a disciple. And I'll list all five of them first. First one is duplicity. And the second one is hypocrisy. The third is unfaithfulness. The fourth is familiarity. And the fifth is disrespect. Okay, so this is mentioned in one verse in I believe it's Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada cites these 5 points as improper mood of a disciple to a guru. So duplicity, hypocrisy, unfaithfulness, familiarity, and disrespect. Those are the five. So what is duplicity? So Radha Shankar Guru, we just mentioned the five ways a disciple becomes unqualified. Hypocritic disciple. First one is duplicity. Second is hypocrisy. Third is unfaithfulness. Fourth is familiarity. And fifth is disrespect. So the first one is duplicity. So what does it mean, duplicity? The opposite of duplicity is simplicity. A devotee is supposed to be simple by nature. One of the qualities, arjava, is mentioned in the qualities of a devotee. The qualities of a brahman is arjava. Arjava means that one is simple. Simple means he accepts things as they are. He doesn't try to read so many things into it. He understands things the way they are. He doesn't try to Of course, some people are by nature very complex. That is their nature. And so they make the simplest thing very difficult. If you tell someone, touch your nose, and he's a very complicated person, he might go like this. If you tell a simple person to touch your nose, he'll go like this. So you get the point? A person who is very complicated or very complex in nature. He takes the easiest things and he makes them very difficult. So devotees by nature is simple. So duplicity means that I'm acting in one way, but I'm thinking in another way. I'm acting in one way, but I'm thinking of it in another way. So that kind of consciousness is not very pleasing to the spiritual master. One, it says that one should be straightforward. One of the symptoms of bhava, ecstasy, is a devotee is straightforward in ordinary dealings. In other words, a devotee is straightforward. He doesn't have some big program behind him. He doesn't have an agenda that he's trying to put forth, and he's speaking in another way in order to get his agenda. Let's see if we can give a more practical example. In other words, a devotee is just trying to become a devotee. He may have mistakes, he may make mistakes, he may have anarthas, he may have material desires, that's all right. But at least if he's trying his best. And therefore he's in one sense he's simple. But if one is pretending, or acting in one way, but in another way he has another program. In other words, I give you one way. Here's a simple little example. But so I want to eat as much prasadam as possible. But at the same time, I don't want to suffer. Because if I eat too much, I suffer. So I want to eat as much as I can without suffering. So I'll just take on some service that requires me to work hard so I can eat as much as I want so I can work it off. Of course, you should work hard. Brahmachari means that brahmacharis are not lazy. Brahmachari means one who is absorbed in service. But sometimes one will think, I want to eat as much as possible. Enjoy prasadam as much as possible. So therefore, I'll volunteer for the construction crew. So I can eat as much as, not that I want to do construction, but I want to eat a lot more. That's a kind of a duplicitous mentality. It's not very straightforward. The agenda, the program is not to serve, the program is to enjoy prasadam as much as possible without getting a reaction. So the mind is not really very straightforward. This is a little simple example. So duplicity. Duplicity really simply means that saying and acting in one way, but in my mind I have another agenda, another program. So that's not very pleasing to the guru. The guru likes a disciple who is simple. He wants his disciple to simply to accept and to carry out to the best of his ability. Hypocrisy is the second one, hypocrite. Hypocrite is It's somewhat similar, symbols, similar to duplicity. One who is a hypocrite is also, in one sense, duplicitous. But hypocrite is more full-blown. It's an ongoing program of cheating. For duplicity, a person may be duplicitous at different times. But hypocrite means that he's simply got an illusion. In other words, a hypocrite may be, I come to devotional service because I want to get a big position so I can get money and can control. Big program. I'll be a GBC or I'll be a manager so I can get a nice position, have people worship me, and have all kinds of facilities. In other words, it's completely, he has a big program of cheating. Or he pretends that he's a great devotee. He acts like some big, great devotee, but in his heart he's just pretending. He's making a big show of devotion. But really, really he has no qualities. He just wants everyone to think he's so advanced. And that's the hypocrite. So that's, of course, when the spiritual master sees that, and then generally he'll do whatever he can to remove that by chastising the devotee, by humiliating him, by giving him services where he has to be, he's forced to become humble. Okay. By not dealing with his questions directly, but dealing with the mood of his questions. Other times Prabhupada, when someone would ask Srila Prabhupada a question, he wouldn't answer the question directly, but he would see what is the intention of behind the question, or he would see what he would see the mood behind the question, and he would deal with that rather than the question. And that's really the way to answer questions, not so much directly answering questions. Because the process of Krishna consciousness is a process of purification of the heart and not simply accumulating knowledge. So, hypocrite, full-blown cheater. Sometimes Bhaktivinoda calls them Dharma Dwajas. Dharma Dwaja. Pretentious devotee. And sometimes they call him also, Prabhupada called him Kali Chela. Kali Chela. He's a disciple of Kali. He's got tilak, neck beads, but he's more on the side of Maya. Kali Chela. You can find that in the scriptures. Some of you have read that. Not everyone comes to Krishna consciousness for the right purposes. Bhagavad Gita explains four types of people come. Those who are distressed, those who are in need of some economic gain, those who are curious, and those who are seekers of the absolute truth. But others come for other reasons. These four Krishna calls are Mahatmas. They're rightly situated, although they come for apparent material reason. But then there's others who come simply because they want to join some organization and they want to be a big man in the organization. Sometimes they can't do it in the material world with a material organization, so they join a spiritual world. And believe me, ISKCON has had its share. Many, many persons who come to this movement simply for their own personal selfish gain. And they don't give it up either, they maintain it like that. Maybe you don't see it so much in India, but in the West it's more prominent like that. And Krishna's been gradually kicking these people out over the years. As the movement becomes purified, these people can't stay. over the years, but we've seen a lot of big problems that have come. And there's one I can tell you, I don't mention any names, there was one initiated devotee just recently, a couple years ago. He travels around from temple to temple, and he just meets young girls at the temple and has some affair with them, and then he takes off to the next temple. Very well. He's got a spiritual name, he wears neck beads and stuff like that. He just hangs around devotees to see what he can get from them. So you find people come for different reasons. So that's a hypocrite. The third is, well, a devotee is unfaithful. He doesn't have faith in the scriptures. He doesn't have full faith in the scriptures. He doesn't have full faith in the words of the spiritual master. He's doubting. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who doubts cannot attain the goal, nor can they be happy in this life or the next. So one who is unfaithful can never really make progress, because the whole process of Krishna consciousness is based on faith. If you don't have faith, you can't make progress. Faith, even in the very beginning, Rupa Goswami describes that one must have some preliminary faith. And then that faith grows in association with devotees and through the execution of bhakti, the process. But there's some people that still remain unfaithful even after some time. They have faith in what they think, they have faith in what they see, rather than having faith in the instructions of the spiritual master. I mean, Prabhupada, there was one devotee back in the early days. Prabhupada was criticizing the moon landing. Said, we never went to the moon. Said, the moon is a higher planet, you can't just go there, just like you go to another country. You have to have passport, you have to have visa, you have to have proper dress. You just can't go to the moon. And so Prabhupada was quite strong on this. This was back in the late 60s, when the whole Western world was excited about the moon landing. So there was one devotee who had joined the movement, and he disagreed with Prabhupada. He would become very upset when Prabhupada would criticize the moon landing. He couldn't accept Prabhupada's analysis. And he would discuss it with Prabhupada, and he would never change. He would say, oh, you see it on television, there it is, we're watching it, because they had all of the films of men landing on the moon. But it was all a show. But he was so convinced. I'll tell you a little funny story. Like a little comedy. So one day, one of Prabhupada's servants, her name was Palita, she used to cook for Prabhupada. So she was in the kitchen cooking, and she had put some ghee on the fire in a wok. And she left the kitchen, and she forgot about the ghee. So the ghee started getting really hot, and then finally it was smoking, and it started to catch on fire. So there was a fire in the kitchen. So she came running in, and all the smoke and this fire all over. So she called for help, and this one devotee, he came running in. He was the one that was against the moon landing. So they both were fighting the fire, and finally they put it out. But they got all their clothes and all their face, they all became full of smoke. So they were all black all over the So Prabhupada heard about what was happening, so he called them immediately. So they came, and they were just like that. So this devotee, his name was Purushottam. So Prabhupada looked at him. He said, oh, Purushottam, you have gone to the moon. He didn't think it was was so funny, but Prabhupada thought it was funny. So, you know, Prabhupada always had this, you know, really interesting sense of humor. But after some time, he left Krishna consciousness. And he left because of that reason. He left because he couldn't accept the fact that Prabhupada was saying we didn't know. Some devotees also left the movement because of the fifth canto. Because of Prabhupada's description of the structure of the universe that's mentioned in the fifth canto. Some devotees could not, and they would try to refigure it out according to the scientific analysis. Prabhupada just said, no, this is the way it is, it's according to Bhagavad. Many devotees who had some intelligence, some scientific experience, they actually left the movement because they thought Prabhupada was wrong. When you think your spiritual master is wrong, that immediately is a blemish. It's an obstacle in your devotional service. And if you don't get rid of that, then ultimately it leads to a fall down. So, it's like one time we have the example with Srila Prabhupada when he was with his spiritual master in the 1930s. They were in a new building in Calcutta called Bhakti Bazar. It was a beautiful building built by one very rich man. And somehow a snake had climbed up on one of the higher floors. So the devotees became alarmed. And so everyone was running around, a snake. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj came out and said, kill it. So somebody came and killed the snake. And Prabhupada was there. He wasn't initiated at the time. He was thinking, how is it? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, very saintly man, how can he can order a living entity to be killed? But he didn't say anything. In his mind, he had some doubt. So he doubted. But then he said, and Prabhupada talks about this himself, he said, later I was reading the seventh canto and I found where Prahlad Maharaj explains that saintly persons take great pleasure in snakes and scorpions being killed. So then he said, then I understood. But he didn't express his doubt. But still, after some time, Krishna gave him the understanding. So if we have any doubts about what the spiritual master says, his instructions in a general way, his instructions in a specific way, should always give clarification. Because if you have any doubts, then it can lead to a fall down. You lose your enthusiasm for full surrender because of this doubt. I mean, I've been approached by disciples of spiritual masters in our movement who have had doubts about their guru, and they've come to me with questions. And so it's quite common. It's not a very rare thing. It's actually common where some doubt comes up. And the best thing to do is to deal with it and not to hide it and make believe it's not there or hope that it goes away. Because sometimes the devotees, when they have some doubts, or they have some, then they just harbor the doubts, and it just bothers them. And then after a while, they lose their faith. So that's the third one, unfaithfulness. One becomes unfaithful. Lack of faith, lack of full faith. The fourth one is familiarity. This is an interesting one, familiarity. The spiritual master is like a father, and in many cases he's very personal and very kind. He sees his disciples as his children. So as a father loves the children, the spiritual master loves his disciples in the same way. And so in many cases, he shows affection, concern, and is very, sometimes talks to them very friendly. And sometimes a disciple may misunderstand or lose his, what we say, awe and reverence and become too familiar and start to take the spiritual master as ordinary. And then he reciprocates that affection in the same way. So one has to be careful like that. One has to be really careful not to get too familiar. There's two really dangerous services in Krishna consciousness. Personal servant to the spiritual master and pujari. These are the two very difficult services because you're close to the fire. If you're too close to the fire, and if you're not like fire, you can get burned. It means you can easily... Prabhupada, we see in Prabhupada's life, many times he had to change personal servants regularly. Because after staying with Prabhupada for a while, and they might start seeing some faults, start seeing something, and or they may be becoming too familiar like that. So that's another defect, becoming over familiar, too familiar. So we can be friendly with the spiritual master, but we should never lose our mood of awe and reverence. That always keep that mood of awe and reverence. Means there should be always a mood of respect. So familiarity is, especially in our movement, we find that can easily manifest, because sometimes the spiritual master is very close to the disciples, and because he's very humble, and by nature he's not pretentious, so he just acts, you know, sometimes very casually, friendly, but the disciples should be very careful. Of course, the spiritual master is also aware not to mislead a disciple. And the last one is disrespect. That's quite, we've pretty much covered that. One should have great respect. One should respect the spiritual master as if they respect Krishna. Prabhupada says, two tracks on the transcendental train, Guru and Krishna. You can't worship Krishna without worshiping Guru, you can't worship Guru without worshiping Krishna. You can't worship one without the other. You worship them together. And Guru is the representative of Krishna, and he's worshipped as good as Krishna, because he's in a position of giving Krishna. He is considered to be servitor Godhead. He is the manifestation of the Absolute Truth, and that serves the Absolute Truth. And therefore, he's from the tattva of Balaram, Nityananda Balaram, who is the original spiritual master. He serves, he is part of the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is made up of six components, and Guru is one of the six components of the Absolute Truth. So, there was that one time where, in the very early days of Krishna consciousness, the devotees were quite young, and Prabhupada had been preaching that anyone who says he's God, he's dog. D-O-G and G-O-D. Anyone who says he's God, he's dog. And then, after preaching like that for some time, the first initiation ceremony came, and Prabhupada spoke about the meaning of initiation and the position of the spiritual master. And the last thing he said in the lecture was, And one should see the spiritual master as God, and then he left. That was the last thing. So everyone became shocked. He's saying if one who is God, he's dog, now he's saying he's God. But actually that wasn't the correct understanding. One should worship the spiritual master as if they're worshiping God. The same thing. No difference. Prabhupada used the example, the viceroy comes on behalf of the king, and the viceroy, the ambassador, gets the same respect as the king. Because he's fully representing the king. So therefore the spiritual master should be worshipped and honored and respected as good as Krishna. And it's easy, it's easy to love Krishna, but it's a little harder to love someone who's walking around on this earth, because sometimes we see faults. But they're not actually faults, they're faults in our consciousness. They apparently appear to be faults, but they're actually faults in our own consciousness. In our vision. So these are the five ways that a disciple can become flawless. Duplicity, hypocrisy, unfaithfulness, familiarity, and disrespect. And so we can find the antidote or the opposite for each. Duplicity means simplicity. Hypocrite means one should be sincere, one should be honest. Unfaithfulness, one should be faithful. Familiarity, one should be humble and respectful, and disrespect, of course, one should be respectful. So this is mentioned in the scriptures, five ways that a disciple becomes unqualified. And then there's also four ways, I believe, that a disciple should develop proper mood. I don't have my notes with me, but I can. Proper mood of a disciple is obedience, simplicity, surrender, service attitude, surrender. Okay, so this is part of a larger seminar. I thought I'd just bring up this one. Any questions? I think we take some questions. We can discuss these things because there's always so many dynamics in guru-disciple relationship. It's easy to see things in the wrong way or not know how to properly act. What is your name?
Shyamananda.
Shyamananda Gaur.
Gaur.
Sometimes we do not get opportunity to talk to the spiritual master directly for a long time. So how can we know that he is pleased with us?
How can we know that he's with you?
He's pleased with us. How can we know that he's pleased with us?
Well, actually, it's disciples should keep contact with the Guru. As far as I know, most spiritual masters want their disciples to somehow keep communication. Now, you can do that through letter. You can always... Because one of the principles that are mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sutta, that one should make relevant inquiry regularly on how one can advance in spiritual life. So if it goes on for some years and you're not making contact, you should write a letter or make some opportunity to take association with the spiritual master and ask the questions. You can say, Guru Maharaj, how can I make advancement? Are you pleased with my service? Like that. You can ask the questions. Or through a letter. So we should do that. So you have you have to make a little effort. You see now, you see what we have in today's ISKCON movement is that we have a worldwide guru system. The guru is traveling all around the world. And disciples are in one place. So generally the history and the tradition is the guru and the disciples are always together. That is the history of spiritual life. The guru is there, the disciples are there. But now we have, you know, 10,000 miles in between sometimes. And this is due to the fact that this is a worldwide movement. But the thing is, Krishna has created so many new means of communication. Email and letters. Also, take opportunity to go see the spiritual master and speak with him, get his darshan. It's important to do that. I could answer your question another way, that he has his representatives in every area, and the representatives are looking after his disciples, and they speak on his... I mean, that's another way to see it, but I don't feel that that's adequate. Adequate means we need some personal contact. We have to have personal contact with our spiritual master in some way. So we should make some effort. It's hard for the guru because he has so many responsibilities. This is the ISKCON movement. Gurus are having so many responsibilities. And yet they have so many disciples. So it's up to the disciple to make some effort. You just write. Write and write a short little letter and send it. On the instructions for me, on the pleas of my service, anything. Just some contact. As long as you make contact, that's important. I know Satyarupa Maharaj, he told me personally, I encourage all my disciples to write me regularly. He likes that his disciples write letters to him, he writes back. Of course, spiritual masters are different. Some are not like that. But generally, you should make some contact. Well, how do you know if he's pleased with you or not? Well, you know when he's displeased. So if he's not displeased, that means he's pleased. Krishna, someone asked Prabhupada, do you know everything? Prabhupada said, I'm not Krishna. He said, I know what Krishna wants me to know. So Guru knows what Krishna wants him to know. And one of the main things that he keeps in contact is what he needs to do to deliver and to encourage his disciples. That he knows what to do. That's his main business. Okay. But make some contact. It doesn't take much. Write some letters, some email. You should not. Sometimes disciples say, oh, I shouldn't bother my spiritual master. He's so busy. But then again, if you're having trouble, then that's more botheration from him than if you... And then it becomes a botheration if you're not nicely situated in your spiritual life. Okay? Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Yes, Chaitanya Charan.
How much of this is applicable to our relationship with our Shiksha Guru? Because generally on a day-to-day, regular basis, our interactions, at least in our case, are mostly with our Shiksha Guru, hardly ever with our Shiksha Guru.
What is the question?
So to what extent are all these interactions applicable with the Shiksha Guru? These five properties.
Oh, the same thing.
Right?
These things, as far as the scriptures explain, refer to the Diksha. But then again, Diksha and Shiksha are two aspects, two equal aspects of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I would think they were equally applicable, because Guru means one who is, you know, giving Shiksha, or knowledge, and he's also giving guidance. So if you have any of these disqualifications, even with your Shiksha Guru, it's going to make a problem. I think these are just general disqualifications of a guru, of a disciple. Whether they apply to the Diksha or Shiksha Guru, it's a disqualification. Because the real qualification is sincerity and faithfulness, right? Obedience. And so I would say they apply to equally. These are anarthas, or what we say, faults. I think they were applying equally to the Shiksha. Especially in our movement, Shiksha seems to become very prominent, because, again, we're not so much able to access the Diksha Guru. So Shiksha, actually, Shiksha is very, very necessary in our movement. It's very, very necessary. Because of the nature of our movement, we have to have Shiksha. It's just the way the movement is designed, the spiritual masters are not so contact close. The Shiksha is necessary. But I think in accepting Shiksha, we also have to accept the responsibility that comes with that. That means that the Shiksha is giving guidance and direction, one should be serious about it. And not just try to, you know, accept it and then analyze it. Diksha is the prominent guru, but in the sense that Diksha Guru's instructions are the ultimate authority, and Shiksha Guru's instructions should be complementary to the Diksha Guru. If they're not, then one must accept Diksha Guru's instructions as the final authority. But at the same time, if one is accepting Shiksha Guru, he should seriously carry out those instructions as long as there's no difference between the Shiksha and Diksha. There may be difference in detail, but not difference in principle. It's a certain phenomenon. I mean, it's very subtle. It's actually a very subtle point. But I think what makes things clear is that this disciple should be sincere. And we find sometimes people approach Shiksha Gurus to see which Shiksha Guru answer suits them better. And I think it's the fault of the disciple, but it's also the fault of the Shiksha Guru. He caters to that. One of the problems we have in our movement is when someone approaches a Shiksha Guru with a problem, but they have approached other people with the same problem. And so the Shiksha Guru is going to answer, and then he's getting another answer from someone else, maybe different. So what a Shiksha Guru should do when he's giving advice to someone who approaches them, you see, he should always inquire from that, you know, devotee, have you discussed this with someone else prior? And if he says yes, then what did he say? And then he gives his analysis. So there's not so many contradictory answers. And that's a problem in our society. People will shop around for the best answer. Yeah. It's almost like it's almost human nature to do that, but that's but it's a flaw. It's a flaw, really, because you know you want. Sometimes you're looking for the best answer, but at the same time, the guru should be very sensitive to see if this person is receiving instructions somewhere else before he gives instructions. Because if he does, then he can create, you know, some kind of, what we say, confusion or some kind of insincerity in that person. It's almost unavoidable in our society. The only way it can be avoided is that the Shiksha gurus should be sensitive to that when someone approaches them for instructions. And of course, sometimes we get instructions in class, just like now, questions and answers. But we may get different answers from different persons. And you will. But I think the devotee should be sincere. If you're not sincere about becoming Krishna conscious, then you know the process becomes so difficult. Sincere means I'm trying my best. I may not be able to understand things clearly, but at least I'm trying. So I would say yes, it applies both cases equally. There's another hand up. Yes, both. Both. The word shiksha means instructions. The essence of diksha is shiksha. We say shiksha because for distinction that someone else besides our diksha is giving us instructions, so we call him shiksha guru. But ultimately, the relationship between disciple and guru is shiksha, instruction. So you can get instructions from many other places, and they're all. Therefore, the scriptures say one can have one diksha guru and many shiksha gurus. You can have many shiksha gurus, but they should not contradict the diksha guru. But there's another thing. This is another example of an insincere disciple. As an insincere disciple, well, he'll get instructions from his diksha guru, and then he'll try to find some contrary instructions from someone else. Or he'll hear something, and then he'll, you know, use that. Sometimes the temple president will tell the spirit disciple to do something, and he'll say, well, I'm going to go see my spiritual master. So that can be a problem. So, but the spiritual masters should be sensitive to the local authorities. That's their concern. As they put their disciples under the care of the temple presidents, and generally, they should have faith and confidence that these temple presidents will help their disciples. In certain cases, maybe they have to intervene, but generally they leave it up to the local authorities. Okay. Yes.
As per my understanding, in gurus also there are different states. Like the goal of a guru will be to, you know, some power stage. Sometimes, you know, Madhuri leader stage. The guru can take disciple to the up to that stage. And can you elaborate on these different stages a guru will have?
Well, it's not like that. There is different stages, but it's not Madhuri and all this other stuff. books. The stages are Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. One can accept a guru, one should accept a guru who is Uttama Adhikari. Uttama Adhikari means topmost of Buddha, one who never falls down. That's Uttama Adhikari. So that's described in Metric Instructions. What is the position of an Uttama Adhikari? But it says also that one may accept a guru from the position of Madhyama Adhikari, second class Adhikari. If one cannot find, or if one is not available on the first class platform. But then again, it says that guru can only take his disciples as far as he is. But he can make more advancement also, and as he makes more advancement, he can also bring his disciples farther. And then there's also gurus on the Kanista. There's Kanista gurus too. But generally we avoid that. So once you accept a guru who is a Madhyama, Uttama Adhikari, highest platform, one who doesn't fall down, and the qualifications and qualities, characteristics are described. What is it? What is it? What is the first line? Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasam uttamam.
Shabde parichana.
Shabde parichana. Nishnatman. Rama upasvarasvaya. So this is topmost guru. One who is learned in all the scriptures and can defeat all other opposing arguments based on scriptures. And who comes into cyclic succession from Krishna. So one should try to find Uttama Adhikari. If one cannot, then one should can accept Madhyama Adhikari. And but a Madhyama Adhikari guru can fall down. And we have examples in our movement. Uttama doesn't fall down. Madhyama can fall down. Okay? But it's not this bob and that ecstasy and this how nice he dances, how many twinkles in his eyes he can manifest at one time, or how many slokas he can quote. That's not guru. Guru is one who is who knows Krishna. Any more questions? Yes.
We are seeing that how
should one behave with the senior?
God brothers?
Oh. With respect. Respect. And service. Service and respect. There's three positions, superior, equal, and inferior. For superiors, you render service and offer respect. Equals, you make friends, and those who are less, you preach to, you bring them up. So, those who are senior, we give respect, we offer service. Okay. Question over here, yes.
Yeah, I heard somewhere before that intellectual people, they have tendency to judge. So due to conditioning, one may have this tendency to judge and doubt. What is the solution if one has this tendency, that condition into a
then you should become a preacher. You have the tendency to judge and analyze, then become a preacher. And you can do it for Krishna. Is that okay? If you have these qualities, then if you don't use them in Krishna's service, they'll manifest as offenses. A spiritual master or a preacher has to make judgments, and he has to find faults, and he has to speak. But unless he's somewhat purified in his consciousness and he's fixed in his service, then it becomes, it's more like an anartha. Can you imagine some new bhakta coming in and giving class? They're all fools, rascals, dogs, hogs. She got her face with poop. I mean, when some new bhakta starts preaching like that, what are you gonna think? He's just a crazy man. He's got a big ego, that's all. But when Prabhupada was doing it, it was actually nectar. And it was done with compassion. So it's a matter of purity. So not everyone can have that consciousness and expect it to be beneficial unless they're actually purified in heart. So the idea is not to get rid of it, but to use it in Krishna's service. Make discriminations based on how to put forward Krishna consciousness. It's not that a person is very intellectual and very analytical, and we're trying to stifle that by creating some kind of mood in his mind that he doesn't think. And he just has to use his bigger brain and more analytical brain for a type of service. This is where the guru comes in and sees the disciple. The disciple has this kind of these tendencies, these qualities, so let me engage in this way. The guru is supposed to be able to engage the disciple according to his nature. That way he can use his nature in a purified way, in a proper way, and become purified. Not that we kill the nature. Okay, makes sense? But we have to be careful if someone has that tendency and they're not using it right. Then it becomes offensive. Yes. Jai. Another Gopinath ki jai. He snuck back in to Radha Kunja Vihara. Well, I'm just joking. Nice to see you.
Sometimes a devotee might not have direct access to a spiritual master, and there might be representatives of the spiritual master who might inspire him in his devotional service, and he might take instructions from them and might execute his devotional service. However, what happens is two devotees might be serving their spiritual master, and both of them might be serving in a different way. In the sense, the styles and the approaches might be different, and the devotee who is inspired by both of them might face a lot of contradictions and you might get confused in the process. Because one devotee
who is inspired by both of them?
Yeah, a devotee is inspired by two senior devotees.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them might be different in their styles and they might be pleasing their guru. However, the devotee who is being inspired by these two, he might be confused by the kind of little contradictions in their instructions or their styles. So at such times, how do we appreciate their different services at the same time?
I've lost something in your question. Two devotees, and they're not in contact, they're working under...
One devotee is not in contact.
Yeah.
Two seniors, they're directly serving the spiritual master.
And they have difference in opinion, difference in their mood of working.
Oh, okay.
There are two seniors above him.
Oh. Oh, so okay, there's the guru, two seniors, and him. Okay, I miss one person right there. And so these two, they're serving their spiritual master, but they have different moods like that. So.
And that might affect a person who's below them.
Well, yeah. Therefore, you have to have a kind of understanding of what is bhakti, and not get caught so much in the personality level. Because bhakti means to bring out a person's spiritual qualities, but still we have individual qualities. As you know, we are persons, we come from different backgrounds, we have different personalities. I mean, there's such a diversity in our movement, it's quite diverse. So, but therefore you have to look for that bhakti, not so much get caught up in the personality thing. Try to see the bhakti in each of them, and not so much their different moves. Because you can't just shut down a person's personality all of a sudden. People are going to bring their personalities into Krishna consciousness too, and they're going to be quite different sometimes. But a devotee who's trying to understand a little bit will have to see, look for the good qualities, look for the bhakti, and not so much get caught up in these other things. Yeah, people have idiosyncrasies. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about idiosyncrasies. What are idiosyncrasies? These are habits that have developed over lifetimes. Maybe certain ways of thinking, maybe certain ways of acting. That is just part of their character. So a spiritual master will kind of overlook that, or he'll deal with that and take it and use it for Krishna service. But from the perspective of a lesser devotee, he just has to see that these different natures. I have a different nature, they have a different nature. One of the problems in our movement is we try to make everybody the same nature. That's the problem. Where this is what the materialists do. They can't deal with diversity, so they have to create this kind of unity by stifling diversity. And we've done it in our movement too. If you don't do things like this, then you're not doing it the right way. Prabhupada did it like this, and you have to do it. We try to make everything, generic. Create the generic movement. Everyone should smile at the same time. No individuality. But individuality has to be, this is where the guru comes in. He takes that creative, that individuality, and he transforms it, makes it into an offering to Krishna. But what we found in our movement is we just try to stifle that. And that's why a lot of people have left our movement. Because they've been pressured into being something that's just like they're not. That's why they say this movement's not for me, because they've been put into a defined, there's a very clear definition of what it means to become a devotee. There is, from one perspective, but then again, there's the individual devotee and then his personality too. So we have to. The process of purification is bringing out their spiritual qualities, and then their material qualities either go, or then they become purified themselves. I mean, there's a lot of devotees who, and of course, Bhaktivinoda Sindhar says, one should associate with like-minded devotees. There's such diversity amongst devotees, it's not that we can associate with everyone, because certain persons' personalities really just turn us off. So you shouldn't try to create some artificial thing, that is that. You can respect that devotee from a distance. And associate with devotees who are mortal, who your personalities can kind of like, you know, like that. That's natural. So I answered it in a broader way, but in the same time, from your perspective, is this respect everyone for who they are and what they're trying to become, and associate with devotees who are like-minded, have similar natures. I mean, there's certain, you know, it's like, so there's certain devotees that I just don't like to be around. you know, they just make me feel uncomfortable. And they're senior devotees, and they're very, you know, powerful. They're doing a lot of preaching, but I just don't find, you know, I just don't feel happy around them. But I can respect them. It's just their personalities and characters are different. It's natural. Now, if you're a pure devotee, then you have no problem. So if you're not, then you have to deal with things accordingly. Okay, is that clear?
Yes.
Is there more questions? It's time for prasad at 12:30. Okay. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much for the very nice questions. And I'll see you on Saturday.
Saturday is 3:30 past one. I'll announce it.
Well, if you can announce it at the Sakshi Sutta. Because he has to get me in on time.
So Saturday 3:30 to 5, Saturday. Huh? Maharaj will do class. Come take class and then meaning just meeting also.
If you like, I can speak some more on Guru Disciple. Talk about what are the positive or desirable qualities of a disciple. That's also interesting. Okay, thank you very much. Guru Prabhupada Ki Jai. Guru Parampara Ki
Jai.
Madhav Gopal means, Madhav Gopal.